Hello, and welcome to episode 30 of Public Interest Podcast with your host, Jordan Cooper, where we interview politicians, activists, advocates, and others who seek to improve the state of the world. We're here today with Jackie DiCarlo, who is the president of Manna Food in Montgomery County, Maryland. How are you doing today, Jackie?
I'm doing great.
Excellent. So the first thing I'd like to ask you is, what are you currently doing or have you ever done to advance the public interest and why?
Well, right now, being with Manna Food Center, I have a great opportunity to try to confront the problem of hunger in Montgomery County, Maryland. Mm-hmm. I came to Manna about 3 years ago after nonprofit work in economic justice programs around the world. Mm-hmm. So I've been very fortunate to be able to kind of think globally and now act locally. And the way Manna does this is through food distribution, mm-hmm. education, and advocacy throughout the community of Montgomery County.
Interesting. So is this a big problem in Montgomery County?
Yeah, it's really very hidden to a lot of us. I mean, we have so much going for us in Montgomery County. People think of the affluence, but there's a lot of different diversity. We have the ag reserve. We have vibrant urban areas, mm-hmm. and life seems very prosperous for so many of us, and that is true, but about 70 to 80,000 of our neighbors are not always sure where their next meal is coming from. Hmm. And that can be seniors who you might imagine would be vulnerable living, you know, on Social Security fixed income. Mm-hmm. But it's also the working poor, people who are trying to make ends meet on two paychecks, but with the cost of living in Montgomery County, mm-hmm. and sometimes the fact that they're new Americans and they're just entering at pretty low wages. Hmm. There's a whole confluence of factors that make it difficult for people to thrive in Montgomery County. And so Manna Food Center is working to help them by providing them bountiful, nutritious food.
So how do people get connected to Manna Food Center?
Well, we're very fortunate. We like to collaborate with other community-based organizations. So we have referral agencies, congregations, people who are already interacting with folks. So it could be a principal at a school, mm-hmm. Lets us know that there's a family that might need our weekly smart sacks, which we send home to kids on Friday afternoons. Hmm. These are students who are trying to achieve, but they live in low-income households, and they need some food to help them over the weekend and their families. So it could be a school principal, it could be a faith leader, or the vast network of organizations like Montgomery Coalition Against Homelessness, mm-hmm. when they're trying to transition people off the streets and into permanent housing. Mm-hmm. So it's a wide array.
So for these 80,000 people in Montgomery County, how many are involved with Manna Food Center on a short-term basis versus a long-term basis? Do you find most are able to transition away from poverty?
That's a great question, and that's one that we've been starting to drill down in, because we really want to help people be self-sufficient, mm-hmm. and don't want to contribute to a cycle or a culture of dependency. So we last year invested in a new database so that we could start to on a more sophisticated way, track the process and progress, mm-hmm. Of our participants. And we are now being able to develop a baseline, mm-hmm. to say, okay, you came to us in this month and you visited us every single month. That may be that's the kind of person who is struggling with a disability, and mm-hmm. they're always going to need our safety net. Mm-hmm. But then there are folks who maybe visit us only 3 or 4 times a year, mm-hmm. and we want to be able to be in conversation with them and understand why do they turn to us and when, mm-hmm. and maybe we can then reciprocate with that referral that I talked about before and say, well, maybe here's some help with childcare or here's some help with job training. And so that's our goal, and it's just we're at the start of our data building and then utilizing that data.
It seems like you see yourselves as one pillar or one cog in a larger social safety net, non-governmental, mm-hmm. social safety net, where other churches or synagogues or housing areas, seems like there's many different non-governmental entities that act as referral sources for you. And now you're saying that you're also going to refer others or some of your clients to other social services agencies. Is that somewhat correct?
Yeah, that's definitely the approach we're trying to take. No one agency is going to end hunger, first of all. So we need our colleague agencies like soup kitchens who are doing more emergency response, like say a Shepherd's Table or Bethesda Cares. Mm-hmm. But then we also know that food insecurity and hunger is part of an economic justice conundrum and concern around poverty and cost of housing and healthcare. So these are all interrelated factors. And really, for us to be effective, we have to be in collaboration with other organizations and other systems. Mm-hmm. And the great thing about Montgomery County is that we have very generous people, and we have policymakers who are committed to that social safety net. Mm-hmm. But we need to make sure that we are working in concert and going toward collective impact, and not just each agency being effective in its own little part of the problem.
So I'm sure you're aware of what your counterparts are doing in other jurisdictions, Northern Virginia, Baltimore City, Washington, D.C. I don't know, maybe you've gone to a conference and you've heard about something happening in another city in the country. Mm-hmm. What are the unique problems facing Montgomery County? Why is this area where you chose to set up, where you are choosing to pursue this social justice mission? And what differentiates us really from other jurisdictions that you've learned about?
Well, I think it's very true that we're trying to take a regional perspective. We're also trying to learn best practices nationwide and even globally. As I mentioned, you know, I do try to bring what we learned about community development, mm-hmm. and effective programming in programs in Nicaragua or Ghana. And what is distinctive about Montgomery County is that, like many other areas, we are facing the suburbanization of poverty. So what we're seeing is there are struggles, for instance, in the District of Columbia, mm-hmm. And folks are being forced out and they're coming to Montgomery County or Northern Virginia, Prince George's. Hmm. And we need to make sure that we have the right infrastructure for meeting those social needs, but that we also are creating new kinds of solutions, given that it's not your traditional problems of a family being on the street, and how do you deal with that? Or whereas, as I was indicating before, we have folks that maybe are working, but they are, as we saw in that awful tragedy at the Piney Branch Apartments, where there's overcrowding and they're having to live together because they can't scrape together enough money for rent. So mm-hmm. new dimensions of the suburbanization of poverty are one of the things that we're grappling with. And we are very fortunate in Montgomery County. What makes us distinctive is we do have a lot of leadership in the Department of Health and Human Services. And mm-hmm. Director Aluwalia does a great job of saying we're always going to have a strong safety net, but she also wants it to be like a trampoline where it helps people bounce back. And we're all learning together how best to do that.
So for our listeners, Director Caruwalia is the Health and Human Services, essentially secretary for Montgomery County.
Yeah.
So let's see. So why did you choose to get involved in food shortage issues in particular? There are many issues that society needs to be to have addressed. And you said you had worked in different, you know, public service positions previously. What is it about this particular line of work that attracts you?
Mm-hmm. Well, because food is such a connector, first uh-huh. of all, of people. I mean, I believe all of us, as human beings, we need food, obviously. That's right. Not a belief. That's just a fact. But it's such a powerful conveyor of culture. And so it brings people together. Hmm. And I believe that if we're going to solve the hunger problem, it will be a community-wide effort. Mm-hmm. I studied as an undergrad sociology. So that kind of cultural power, mm-hmm. I believe in very much. But also, as I was working on fair trade issues or other projects around the world, I did see, of course, the importance that food has from a nutritional standpoint. So there are so many links between how people can thrive and what they are able to have access for in terms of food. We talk a lot at Mana Food Center about not just wanting to give people calories, but wanting to give them nutrients, things that will help them be healthy mm-hmm. and give their best contributions to their families and their communities. And when I was working in places like Mexico or visiting organizations in India, you see how debilitating it can be when people don't have enough healthy food. Mm-hmm. And therefore, between the cultural, kind of the soft stuff that touches your heart, but also the facts of how important nutrition is, it just came together for me that it was important to be involved in the food system. Mm-hmm. And so when I moved to Montgomery County, I started to look around as to see who was doing what and discovered Mana and volunteered a little bit. And now here I am.
So do you have any sense on what kind of return on investment your supporters get for their contribution? And I ask this because, of course, as you mentioned, the value, the role of nutrition in somebody's life, clearly there are correlated health outcomes with the diet that you take. Mm-hmm. So if you're providing more nutritious and healthy foods, does that lead to reduced truancy from school and mm-hmm. therefore better graduation rates? Does it lead to better job attendance? Does it lead to fewer admissions to the emergency department? Mm-hmm. What kind of cost savings on a societal level are mm-hmm. we seeing for every dollar invested in Mana Foods?
Yeah, so Mana serves on Healthy Montgomery, which is a multi-stakeholder initiative to try to get at some of the address the social disparities in health. Mm-hmm. And then also to what you're pointing at is to increase and improve the health outcomes. We also work with some of our colleague agencies in the health field and clinics, and we're beginning to figure out how to track that from a quantitative standpoint of actual improvement in mm-hmm. In the same things that you're talking about, levels of obesity or struggles with diabetes. Mm-hmm. Right now, it's for us, it's pretty much self-reported, mm-hmm. but we do have some program designs where we're going to, as funding allows, be able to track people from when they are first referred to Mana mm-hmm. and what their baseline data is, and then similar to what we were talking about with self-sufficiency, if their health outcomes are proven to be verifiable. We are very encouraged because people do self-report mm-hmm. that they've lost weight or they have more energy, and we just want to document that and replicate it more. But if I may, I would also, one thing that I do have is very specific in terms of return on investment. We received a small grant from Maryland Hunger Solutions for $10,000 to do 6 months of food stamp outreach. Hmm. And we've been able to have a part-time staff person go out into the community and help people sign up for food stamps mm-hmm. because food distribution is not the only way we're going to end hunger. Mm-hmm. People also have to access important federal programs and state programs. We've been able to get folks $48,000 worth of food stamps less than 6 months. So that's an incredible story of how we were able to leverage that seed money, and it goes into the pockets of struggling families, often who are single moms. What we're finding is that most of the folks that we're talking to who need these benefits have just gone through a separation mm-hmm. or trying to escape domestic violence, and that allows them to buy more groceries for their kids.
So a concrete example of a 480% return on investment.
Yes, you did the math very well.
So I imagine there are a lot of interesting challenges, both logistically. I imagine most of what your organization handles is logistics of just where are the people and how do we get the food to them from wherever the food's kept. And then I'm sure there are allergy issues and then cultural issues. Mm-hmm. For instance, a Muslim family that comes here from the Middle East may not be inclined to eat pork products mm-hmm. Or West African Muslims. So could you talk to me about a little bit about the cultural competency issues, the allergy issues, and the logistical issues of actually making this happen?
Mm-hmm. Well, we do try to honor all religious restrictions. Mm-hmm. And so as part of our intake, when we're talking to folks about placing a food order, We want to know what are those religious and also medical or dietary preferences. So if somebody is a vegetarian or if somebody is kosher or if somebody has been told by their doctor you need to follow a low-sodium diet. Mm-hmm. Now, where the logistics gets into it is that we're only able to offer what our inventory allows. We get millions of pounds of food through a process called Community Food Rescue, which we really appreciate when grocery stores and farmers markets and caterers donate to us. We have the community responding with food drives. MSI soccer does a weekend food drive. All of that comes into our warehouse. But we also need to purchase food if there is not in our inventory what folks need. And so we have a registered dietitian who creates the menus, if you will, or the contents of our boxes, because we offer about 60 pounds of food for a household. But that has to be very carefully constructed based on what these needs are. And that can be a logistical challenge, especially when we're reaching about 35,000 people a year. Mm-hmm. To be able to be that individualized and personalized mm-hmm. is something that is what we're called to do, but we are also limited by the constraints of our inventory. And that's why we really appreciate when people... we always say we need friends, volunteers, we need food, but we want healthy food, and we need funds to buy what has to be made up in the gaps.
Okay. And so you mentioned, I just wanted to clarify, 60 pounds of food. That's for how many people over what period of time?
So we offer that monthly. Okay, and monthly. In most cases, it's for the household that comes to us. Our average family size is about 3 people. But we do have a choice pantry, which is a new initiative that we did with Colesville Presbyterian Church, and we're mm-hmm. about to replicate in another congregation in Silver Spring United Methodist, mm-hmm. where people are able to choose the food, almost shop for it, mm-hmm. and that the amount of dollars that they have to spend is based on their household size. So that's able to be a little bit more specific to the needs of a particular family.
And they would go shopping, so to speak, in the warehouse?
No. So the pantry is hosted by the congregation.
Okay.
And so they show up in Silver Spring. They have to place an order. Everybody needs to give us 24 hours so we can get the food available. And then depending on their household size, they're able to choose the number of products that are culturally appropriate uh-huh. To an earlier point that you made, but also that match their health needs.
So they would go to like the church mm-hmm. and they would see a room full of food stuff and they could select the items that they wanted up to a certain value amount.
Yes. Thank you. You translated it very well. But another thing about that picture you just painted is also there's hospitality offered.
Okay.
So while people are waiting their turn mm-hmm. to shop, they are given refreshments, the kids have books to read, yeah. the conversation is fostered. So it's a really welcoming space. And that's one of our aims, is to offer good food and welcoming spaces.
So as we kind of near the end of this podcast, I'd really like to bring the conversation back to Jackie DiCarlo. You know, this is a wonderful mission. You give a lot of yourself. You've done a lot of public service work before you even came to MANA. Talk to me a little bit more about your motivations. Why have you given so much of yourself? Clearly, you could have chosen another path in life and made more money, potentially spent less time at work and more with your family or doing your extracurricular activities. Why give so much? What drives you to public service?
Well, I will say from the get-go, I mean, people are very grateful. I meet a lot of wonderful people, and they're always thanking me for what MANA's making possible. It's very exciting to see people on our tours of grocery mm-hmm. stores learning about how to read labels. It's very empowering to watch that. Mm-hmm. So that's very gratifying. But from a personal perspective, when I was a kid in elementary school, my parents separated and divorced, and my mom was basically a single mom, unexpected to me and to her. And so she had to take on 2 jobs so that my sister and I could be provided for. Mm-hmm. We had a pretty strong safety net through our family, mm-hmm. But it did put us in a situation of credit card debt, and my lifestyle changed from that of my neighbors. Mm-hmm. So I know a little bit about what it's like to not know where your next meal is coming from. I saw the stress that it had on my mom. I know what it did to my family. But I also know that because of community resources, we are very involved in our church. We were able to bounce back. And so I want to give back a little bit and honor what my mom taught me, which is you pay it forward.
A lot of personal empathy from personal experience drives your desire to give back.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then I just can't help but ask, if you had a genie and that genie happened to be the governor and the speaker and the president of the legislature and the county executive and all the different elected officials, right? And that genie could grant you a wish from our different legislatures and our different governments, you know, maybe what is it you'd ask for? Would you ask for a more comprehensive social safety net that is publicly funded that integrates housing and food and healthcare and everything? Or what is it exactly that you think we ought to be doing as a society?
I think that that genie would focus on helping everybody recognize that we have a part to play that can really be win-win. I saw this in the fair trade movement. I saw businesses that really prospered and did well at the same time that they paid a fair price and gave some of their profits back to the community. I saw that the nonprofits were there for really important reasons, for capacity building and technical assistance to help farmers or basket weavers. So I know that what is that saying about a rising tide can lift all boats? Mm-hmm. I've seen it happen in many places around the world. So I would really love it if the genie would make our business sector, our public sector, and our nonprofit sector realize that there are win-wins possible when we work together. And we don't just kind of say, oh, all right, this is social services, so we'll give a certain portion of the budget. Or I'm a corporate giver. I need to give this much of our marketing budget. No, we need to be part of a concerted effort to make everybody in Montgomery County and Maryland thrive.
So that's Jackie DiCarlo speaking about how integration across society is in the public interest because, in effect, everything is connected to each other. And the wealthy and those who are more indigent and all members of our society are interconnected in multifarious ways, often that aren't immediately visible, but which really affect, basically Jackie is saying everyone affects one another. Everyone can find themselves unexpectedly in a situation where they rely on their community. And therefore, advancing the public interest is inherently somewhat in each of our self-interests. And it's very rewarding to see smiles every day, and potentially that is some of its own reward. So thank you for joining us for episode 30 of Public Interest Podcast with your host, Jordan Cooper, where we interview politicians, activists, advocates, and others who seek to improve the state of the world. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time.